Hi there, everyone.
Hi there.
Hi.
Okay, let's start the interview officially, shall we? We can do the Bugs Bunny.
You gotta redo that, man. You can't go with that FUD action. I shan't do an Elmer FUD interview. Hello.
Would you all please identify, since this is radio, would you please all identify yourselves so we know that we have the right band, which is up for grabs, in the room, please?
Joe Pernice.
Patrick Berkery.
Peyton Pinkerton.
And you are seeing this is the big test. And the band, you now, based on you, it's likely we know what the band name is.
Pernice Brothers.
Would you two agree to that?
I concur.
I have to speak with my attorney first.
Just speak with your
attorney. We have confirmation. Just if I say this is the Pernice Brothers and you don't disagree, just hang up the phone in 10 seconds.
Hey, I was in Newbury Comics the other day and they were out of your records. So, you know, there's something to be said for that.
I know, they sold out, actually.
I'm serious.
Which is a very good thing, you know.
I was with a friend and I said, this is who I'm interviewing on Monday or Tuesday. See, I don't even know what day it is because I flew back yesterday. It is rare we interview a band twice. Why do you think you're here?
I don't know, because it worked out on the calendar.
Yeah, because he was here before. Now, can you guys explain why I would ever want to interview this band a second time?
Because we could all make it this time, right?
The new record, he said, launching seriously, features a reunion with that there producer Michael Demming, which hasn't happened since album Uno, am I correct?
Of this band.
Not the Scud Brothers, band. So what prompted it?
I think we wanted to make a record in a real studio again. We've been making the last ones kind of guerrilla at home, doing it on digital, and I just wanted to do a record on 2-inch analog tape and... You know, because we worked with Mike before, we knew what he was capable of. So I just called him up. I hadn't spoken to him in a little while. Just rung him up and asked him. And he said, yes, let's do it.
Had you guys been familiar with Mr. Demming's work in the past?
I worked with him on Overcome by Happiness, and I recorded with him in other capacities.
And I guess I should ask the two of you, because then we can always revisionist history. What is like your background? Like, dude, you've been with the Pernice Brothers
since day one.
September of 97.
You are a unique man, obviously, that you've been willing to take that on.
Well, there's other extenuating circumstances.
And you obviously have some Boston history that we don't know about yet, just based on you. No, you, sir.
Me, sir. No, I'm from Philadelphia.
How long have you been with the Pernice Brothers?
I think since the summer of 2003. I had been in a band and was in both bands for a while called The Bigger Lovers, who Tom Monahan, our former bass player, had produced. And I'd worked on some other things with Tom, and he sort of invited me. And I had a sit down with Joe at a coffee shop in Brooklyn, and we talked about a few things.
A coffee shop in Brooklyn.
And
you fit the height requirement.
All the drummers have to be like 6'5", yeah, it seems, and have like an arithmetic heartbeat and... You know, like Abe Lincoln.
That's almost too much. That was almost too much for me to absorb.
You asked.
It's on tape, so luckily you don't have to absorb.
Yeah.
I can go
the
back.
The machine absorbs.
I can go back.
You asked.
Was it Michael's choice to record in Connecticut?
Well, that's where his studio is.
So that was his studio.
Yeah, as was both Massachusetts and Overcome by Happiness were recorded in his studios as well.
Ah. So you didn't have to go through the producer artist, hey, this is what we want to do and here's our relationship and please don't come in and mess with what we like to do, but you
not
know.
Really, because I mean he's a pretty on some levels very low-key guy, and we have a good relationship, so he knows what we do and I know what he does, and I send him some songs and said, you know, we want it to be XYZ, and he was pretty much on board right from the get-go.
And this is the big, exciting return of horns and strings.
Yeah.
So he's like, ooh, the horns. Big and exciting, maybe not.
That one.
Did they come into play when planning the recording or as you were composing, did you say horns and strings?
Yeah, probably during, when I finished writing a bunch of songs and it became kind of apparent the way they were going to be done. You know, I could, you know, started hearing them. I knew I wanted to have them on there. So, and Deming's the guy for that. He's a great composer, so... That was another reason why.
Arranger boy.
Arranger, composer, fantastic.
Now, you say in your notes somewhere about this album that you want to out Badfinger. Now, I think, you know, the harmonies of the Pernice Brothers and even before then have always out-beatled birds, Badfinger-esqued everybody. So,
no.
Well, I mean, but so what other esques? Let's add some more esques. Who else? Because, you know, when you say out Badfinger-esque, you are either doing a good thing for your audience or making them go, Badfinger, they did Come and Get It, didn't they? And they don't know that they was Wish You Were Here, and they don't know that there were all these other...
That's
you know,
not
that,
my
that was,
problem.
That was a kind of iconic band.
I guess.
But when you say you were out to out Badfinger-esque Badfinger...
I think we just wanted to go over the top pop arrangements, string, you know, a lot of guitars, vocals, string arrangements, giant choruses without getting in Journey territory. But, you know, that's something for the press release, too.
Well,
you know, I got to give someone something
in
to
Journey's
glom
hometown.
On.
Hometown. Yeah,
when the lights go out.
Yeah.
You remember when Steve Allen used to do the lyrics where he would, you know, get down boogie, yeah. oogie, oogie, and he would do them as poetry?
Yes. Oh,
yeah. You know, I think lights... deserves that.
Deserve that treatment.
When the lights go out in the city. You know, you can have a lot of fun with that.
If Steve Areno were still with us, he might do that.
If he was.
But he's not.
Well,
he
maybe
isn't.
Maybe no, there could be the
7 years. 7 years gone.
Maybe there could be the Steve Perry show. And Steve Perry could do a late night show. And
could
that
be.
Would be...
different kind of show.
Entertaining beyond all physical belief, I'm sure.
They'd put that on Lifetime, I think.
I had dinner in Somerville, as it turns out, on Sunday night. And so what prompted it as the place for where you don't care if she's pretty when you leave Suck City?
I don't know. Just showed up. I always thought Somerville had kind of a, you know, a pop, you know, if you're looking for like a classic pop title, Somerville. No, I mean,
so it had nothing to do with the fact that you know, mass-based band or anything. It was just...
Well...
Because now, you know, Dorchester, take Dorchester and Suck City. These are romantic locations to talk about in song. These are romantic places.
Oh, they really are, right.
But all kidding aside, so it was mainly just an opportunity to pick a cool-sounding city name for a for a love song.
And I pinched quite a bit from Nick Flynn's book, you know, Another Bullshit Night in Suck City.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of lifted that. But he was okay with it. I've been in touch with him. He's all right.
Good. The video for the song.
Yeah,
should
like
be in heavy rotation on MTV by now, or at least have 1 million downloads on YouTube. And the humor was not lost on me at all. So tell me a little bit about the depth of thinking, because that way people can go to the website and watch the video for Somerville and think that they're going to get this wonderful, heartfelt performance video, and then they suddenly get a few minutes of...
faceless, late 30-year-old... dude struggling riding a bicycle on some rollers, if you know what those are. Those things when I used to race bikes, and I kept my rollers, which are these like cylinders that you pedal on, and the centrifugal force keeps you up, and you just sort of
Did you shoot that before or after that infamous video with the band on the treadmills doing a disco dance that had 1 million downloads on YouTube?
I've never seen any of that. So
Okay Go. Yeah, they had, well, boy.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah, they had like 3 million downloads. So I was just wondering if there was inspiration. But I think you were the inspiration for them.
I don't know about that. Great things happen simultaneously in the world, unrelated.
What's it like to drum to these songs? We figure we'll just get off the topic.
It's, you know.
And then we're going to get back to him while he comes up with a really clever answer.
All kidding aside, it's quite nice because I've been in bands with lyric writers who weren't quite on a par with Joe. So, you know, as a fan of the medium, I think it's nice.
And back to you, Joe.
What's the question?
I don't know the songs. I mean, you write
I don't
these.
No, you're just trying to say something. I think truly... I try to say something that I believe or that I can speak from some kind of, you know, draw off some experience. You know, it's not just about making something up or dumbing something down for people. I don't think about it too much, to be honest with you, about how it's going to go over. I just try to write a thing that I think I would like to hear. But I'm also maybe it's naive to think, but I do think that if we just started pulling out the formulas and just going for, you know, the ABC, you know, trying to cater to a certain lowest common denominator, I don't think it would be liked. I really don't. I think we'd have even fewer fans than we do now. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I could write some kind of dopey thing and it would be a colossal hit, but
I don't know.
Probably not.
There are a lot. Fans, I don't think.
Well, I was just going to say there's a lot of people that could very easily, or you can just start a new band, you know, Blink 348, and do that, I suppose.
I'm also not 21 years old either. You know, I mean, I was 20. I'm 39 years old. I didn't even make a record till I was 28. So, I think I had kind of passed through a certain phase by the time I even started making records. You know.
And then we're very lucky because we now have Grudge .. 2006 available on actual vinyl, right?
No, actually.
Well, on actual whatever that is, titanium plastic stuff.
Yes.
But that was a popular one live. Is that why you chose to put it on the...
Yeah, my old band never really did it. Even when we recorded it, I remember recording it on a 4-track cassette. The original version... Excuse me. That's on that came out on Massachusetts album. Was done on a 4-track cassette where I recorded an acoustic guitar, brought it to this guy who I knew who played piano. He laid down a piano, bass player plugged in. He played bass to it. I sang, and then the guitar player did a lead over the part where I don't sing on the same track. We used 4 tracks, no bouncing, and we never played it live. We almost played it live once, but we didn't even make it through the whole song. It just turned into a colossal train wreck. So that song never really belonged to that band, I don't think. We never rehearsed it. We played it half a time live. And then when this band started, I always thought the song kind of lent itself to a bigger arrangement. So we picked it up and started playing it live, and it evolved through us playing it live. And then I finally realized, hell, we should, you know, kind of do it the way we do it, because it really is a song that belongs to this band.
How shall I... pronounce, and how would you like everybody to pronounce the name of that song on the air?
Well, you don't say the F word, but you put it, you know.
So Grudge Star 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 Star?
Grudge Fudge.
Grudge Fudge.
Like the Stones had Star Star, you could say Grudge Grudge. You know, Star Effer, the Stones song, if you remember that.
You ask, you get.
Yeah.
Grudge Grudge.
06.
06.
06.
Yeah. Grudge Grudge 06. That's got some nice... a little cadence. Latin rhythm thing going on, and you do the dun 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 grudge grudge 06.
Mambo more.
We sample it a little bit. We, you know, get a good
it was
scratcher.
Not on vinyl, so you can't scratch.
You can scratch CDs. There are players that they have that you can do that.
See, I'm new school, man.
Speaking of live, I guess that's the only place you can hear your rendition of "Talk of the Town," which is my favorite Pretenders song.
No, we recorded it.
Did you?
It's I think it's on the live album.
It is, yeah. It is.
On the live
record. We did a live album that we did a version of that.
So let's go through some of the covers. I heard somewhere you're also doing "Please, Mr. Please" occasionally.
Doing that.
That's pretty special.
Yeah. I played that, and the Scud Mountain Boys recorded that song on our very first record. Uh-huh. And so, you know, just to.
Because you have such respect for that particular.
It's a good tune.
It's a good tune.
It's a good tune, and I think people like to hear it. And, you know. I don't deny that we don't have a lot of time to play. And, you know, I have 3 records with my old band and 7 or however many records with this band. And you just can't do them all. But, you know, I'm not ashamed, or I don't try to run away from the old material. Like some people will be like, oh, I don't want to ever hear that stuff I did early. I don't have a problem with it. You simply don't play for 3 hours in a night and get it all in. So, you know.
Like the old days where it was 40 on, 20 off, where you could.
Yeah,
do
know.
6 sets, right?
Yeah, well, I don't think...
I felt sorry for those bands, because by the 3rd set, they were kind of like, uh-oh, maybe we better play the hit again, but...
That was before my time, I think.
And I think even longer shows, I think people's attention spans, my own included...
No matter who it is, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if Jesus played after, you know, whoever, I might be bored. You know what I mean? You can only take so much music.
I heard he's opening for Morrissey next year.
He might be. But anyway,
at least it was a request. Now, whether he's going to take the gig or not,
Morrissey
is open to debate.
Him.
The Sermon on the Mount, I think, clocked in at 42 minutes.
It's so. Too long.
He's having trouble getting a visa, I think.
Jesus is
working papers. Yeah.
Yeah, you know. Well, you know what it is, the drugs.
Could be.
And the new laws, too much liquid. He's trying to bring the little liquids in the little bottles through, and it's just not working for him. So we do a thing called a musical sandwich. And
yes.
It's you're going to play a couple of songs. So it's 2 of your songs as the bread. But then I want you to pick a bunch of music by other artists in between.
I would like to hear or play probably 8-Line Poem by David Bowie off of Hunky Dory. I'd like to hear My Old Desk by Harry Nilsson.
Nice.
And I would like to hear Jimmy Webb's version of Theme from MacArthur Park.
Nice.
And I'm done.
Oh, he's done.
I'm going to go all Bay Area on this, if I may. I'd like to pick Sly and the Family Stone, If You Want Me to Stay. I would like to pick Fleetwood Mac, Lindsey Buckingham from the Palo Alto area. I'd like to pick Save Me a Place.
There you go.
And for the third, I would like to pick a bit more of an obscure song, Romeo Void, Girl in Trouble is a Temporary
Thing. That'll
go
well
on Sunday.
I would
pick Translator and all that stuff if I could.
Everywhere If I'm Not and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, the Romeo Void song is beautiful.
You can have Everywhere. You know, we can have
it. Do it, man.
You can do it. You know, he's not going to kill you if you have one more song than him, I don't think.
I'm not a greedy man.
No, man, you can only have two. You can only have two songs.
Two. The first three are. I'm fine with that.
Pink, what do you got?
Pink,
Flipper. Follow up. I would have to go with the
Naked
title
Raven.
Track off of the Pretty Things album, SF Sorrow, first song.
One.
The Butthole Surfers, Human Cannonball, Box of Rain by the Grateful Dead.
Oh!
Oh, man.
Oh!
Woo!
I will not apologize for that.